1st, 2023. We have six cases on our calendar today, four set for oral argument. This is the third of the four oral matters. This is A23-1151 in the matter of the civil commitment of Carrie Mitchell Lenz. We are holding this via Zoom and having it virtually. This will be recorded and it will be available within a few days. However, no other recordings are permitted. The counsel for appellant, you will have 15 minutes for initial arguments, followed by 15 minutes for respondent, and then 5 minutes for rebuttal by appellant for counsel, if you so choose. We do have a clock in the Marshall's Square there, so please be mindful of that so that you finish within your time limit. And with that, counsel for appellant, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Anthony Noss, Assistant Attorney General, and I represent the Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Human Services. The Commissioner respectfully asks that this court reverse the commitment appeal panel majority's order granting Mr. Lenz's request for provisional discharge because the panel majority clearly erred. The panel majority clearly erred because five of its central findings, those related to Mr. Lenz's regression in treatment, avoidance of treatment, job loss, ability to follow provisional discharge conditions and cooperate with supervision, and expert credibility are manifestly contrary to the weight of the evidence. Those findings are central and significant because they all relate directly to the statutory factors that must be considered when determining whether Mr. Lenz is capable of making an acceptable adjustment to open society, which is, of course, the overarching question when concerning the issue of provisional discharge.
Counsel, I'd like to stop you right there because you are arguing that five of the panel's majority panel's findings were contrary to the weight of the evidence. Isn't that really an issue for the panel to which we give deference as to the appropriate weight for the evidence? I mean, aren't you asking us to inappropriately as an error correcting court to step in the shoes of the fact finder and say, no, we would have weighed these differently?
No, Your Honor, that is absolutely not what the commissioner is suggesting. And really that language I was using mirrors what the Supreme Court said in the Kenney decision that's cited in the commissioner's brief. That case reflects in part that clearly erroneous means manifestly contrary to the weight of the evidence or not reasonably supported by the evidence as a whole. The Kenney decision talked about how that standard doesn't contemplate a reweighing of the evidence, but it's a review of the record to confirm that evidence exists to support the decision. So what the commissioner is arguing is that this court should look at the evidence and find that for some specific findings, there is not enough evidence to support those findings and therefore not to support the overall decision.
Well, in this case, I mean, our standard of review is that we have to look at the evidence in a light favorable to the findings, don't we?
Well, Your Honor, I suppose the court might, it may be reasonable to view the clear air standard generally as being, you know, relative to, say, de novo review, more deferential, but that doesn't mean that there's, you know, there still is this clear air review, and it is, you know, the standard is kind of what I've just kind of quoted from that Kenney case, so.
Well, but when we're looking at the evidence here, I mean, we have to see if there's any evidentiary support for the panel's, at least the majority of the panel's decision. And there was an expert that they cited to that did support the panel's decision to provisionally discharge Mr. Lenz. Isn't that correct?
Yes, Your Honor, it is correct that the panel seemed to rely heavily on Dr. Ahlberg. But again, I would just stress that, you know, this court is looking at whether the evidence as a whole sustains the findings. So it's not as impervious to review or reversal as I think Mr. Lenz might wish it to be portrayed as. You know, clear error review is something that this court does, and the commitment appeal panel's orders are not immune from review.
I agree with you, Mr. Noss. They're not, and certainly the dissent makes a very strong case as to why the majority was wrong. What is as to one of the five things you were talking about was expert credibility. So, how did the panel err in accepting Dr. Ahlberg's expert testimony? What was wrong there? Was he not qualified? I mean, how do we get around Ahlberg's testimony if we were to reverse?
So really, Your Honor, there's kind of two main points. The first one is that it seems that the panel found that, and this was at page 18 of the panel majority's decision, it found that Dr. Ahlberg's opinion was more credible and persuasive, and I'm adding in the ... after considering the evidence as a whole. So it seems, at least in part, it's based kind of on its overall findings. Now, the commissioner has in her brief highlighted several key findings that are clearly erroneous. So to the extent that the panel is apparently relying on those other findings to find Dr. Ahlberg more credible, that goes to finding their credibility determination clearly erroneous. Moreover,
but let me stop you there. I mean, you've got an awfully heavy burden, I think, in terms of credibility determinations, because we generally defer to the fact finder's credibility determinations. And while we certainly can review to see whether the record supports the panel's decision, we seldom get into credibility determinations.
Your Honor, I will fully acknowledge that there is, I know there is case law that I think uses, like there's the one case that talks about due regard for credibility determinations, I believe, or great deference.
Well, I think a lot of case law uses even stronger language of, you know, we don't review credibility determinations.
Well, Your Honor, I would point specifically to the Rasmussen case cited in the commissioner's brief. It's a 2013 case from the Supreme Court. That case supports that although a lower court's credibility determinations are to be given, quote, due regard, unquote, on appeal, they are nonetheless reviewed for clear error. So although there's kind of these terms that I'm aware, you know, are used in case law, great deference, due regard, things like that, it appears from the Supreme Court that those credibility determinations are nonetheless reviewed for clear error. And the clear error standard has already been discussed today.
Right, but the clear error standard is whether or not the record supports that decision. And we have to view the evidence in light most favorable to that decision, as Judge Hooten pointed out.
But importantly, Your Honor, where the evidence as a whole does not support sustain the panel's findings, it should be reversed under the clear air standard. And that's what the commissioner is arguing is the case here.
And if I could just, So in looking at the dissent of finding 21, Judge Smith said, I find the majority has exaggerated petitioner's treatment progress and ignored public safety concerns. So first of all, do you agree with that statement?
That is consistent with the commissioner's arguments in her brief. Your Honor.
What are the public safety concerns we should be focusing on? Is this the ice cream? You know, it's my understanding he was, I guess I want to say, above average likely to reoffend. What's the evidence of the public safety concerns that you believe the commitment panel ignored?
As part of answering that question, Your Honor, I want to focus on the court mentioned ice cream. And I think it, you know, at first glance, the court might say, oh, this is an ice cream incident. But we, if we really dig in deeper to it, you can see how it is so concerning. So
because it was chocolate ice cream?
No, Your Honor, it has to do, we have to kind of go back to his offense cycle. So Exhibit 109 indicates that Mr. Lenz has spoken a lot about adrenaline as part of his offense cycle. Now, if we go to this incident itself, Mr. Lenz, this is in Exhibit 819, page 28, Mr. Lenz himself found that the behaviors that resulted in one of his cars, the clientability accountability reports, were akin to how he felt and acted during sexual offending. So it's not just that he took ice cream and, oh, you want to prevent him from being provisionally discharged because of that. We've got someone who had this sort of adrenaline-based offending. He himself related at least one of his cars to how he felt during sexual offending. So moreover, that incident, which was theft, would violate, if he did it on provisional discharge, one of the very terms of his proposed provisional discharge plan, which is to remain law abiding. So it's not, I understand, Your Honor, how
fair enough. Fair enough. Okay. I get it. What about what's the evidence that he has not progressed in treatment?
So, Your Honor, the commissioner did not argue that he hasn't progressed at all in treatment. So I would just point that out. The main finding that the commissioner was, one of them that she was focusing on, was how the panel found that he had not regressed in treatment. And a big point there I'd like to focus on for the court is that the matrix scores that are in the record, which are kind of the record would support that these are kind of the primary therapist gives them these scores in these various areas. We don't have in the record matrix scores for the second and third car incidents that happened for Mr. Lenz. So the panel should have taken account for that. Also, after his first car, the exhibits show a precipitous drop of his enhanced scores from 62 to 42 after that. So in part, we have that the panel's finding that he has not regressed in treatment was clearly erroneous. Also, the panel clearly erred when it found the record contains no evidence that he has avoided needed areas of treatment. And that was another area that the commissioner focused on. So just to be clear, Your Honor, the commissioner isn't saying
is that goes to like he didn't apply for the extended visits outside of the medical visits. Is that one of the points that you're trying to make, Mr. Noss?
I don't know if that was specifically that argument or that sort of analysis was specifically made in the brief, Your Honor. But yes, that would be indicative of him not doing something, you know, because reintegration, there was, I believe even Dr. Alberg clearly testified that reintegration was a need for Mr. Lenz. But yes, and I do believe the record supports that he has not applied for reintegration outings. And I believe Dr. Alberg even testified that he thought that Mr. Lenz might be afraid to do so or something like that. One important part of the record that I want to point out in terms of him avoiding needed areas of treatment, Exhibit 19, page 63, reflects, it's an April 14th, 2023 progress note that Mr. Lenz was resistant to needing to work on his treatment and stated he felt he had done all of his work. So this is from, you know, his providers reporting what he said to them. that recently, that close to the hearing.
You will agree that your burden, that you had the burden of proof as the state that to prove by clear and convincing evidence that the provisional discharge should be denied, right?
Your Honor. That yes, Your Honor, that's correct.
And I know you relied on Kinney, and in Kinney, there was really no expert involved in that case that supported the provisional discharge. But yet the Supreme Court decided that notwithstanding that fact, that they affirmed the CAP panel's decision that the expert testimony involved there did not meet that high burden of proof. And they allowed the provisional discharge. Doesn't Kinney really not support your position here? Because here at least there is an expert that the panel relied upon and granting the provisional discharge and finding that the state had not met this high burden of proof.
In response, Your Honor, there's kind of two main points that I'd like to make. First of all, Kinney really seems to highlight how fact-specific these cases are. And here the commissioner, and I guess this is kind of the second point too, the commissioner is not coming before this court and going, Court of Appeals, look, there's two experts who opposed and one that didn't. That constitutes clear error. That's absolutely not what the commissioner is doing. Instead, the commissioner had these several key area arguments. So no, Your Honor, I don't think that Kinney really hinders. Obviously there's the clear air standard, but the commissioner is not, again, arguing, just look at the number of experts or something like that. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. And you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Counsel for respondent, you have 15 minutes. Please state your name for the record, the party you are representing, and you may proceed.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Jennifer Tong, and I am the attorney for Mr. Lenz, who is the respondent in this case. As we obviously have talked about in this case, we have an order from the commitment appeal panel that granted Mr. Lenz a provisional discharge. And I think the order clearly states how and why the panel majority viewed the evidence the way it did. Likewise, we have a dissenting opinion in which that judge explained her opinion and how she would have weighed the evidence differently. As the court has already mentioned here this morning, on review, the evidence is to be reviewed in the light most favorable to the findings, and it is immaterial that a different conclusion may have been reached. And I think from my perspective in reviewing the briefs and listening to the argument here this morning, I think that the commissioner is asking this court to do what you've already stated you cannot do, and that is to reweigh the evidence or to reconcile the conflicting evidence within the record. I think, in just kind of touching on this issue of the rule infractions, the client accountability reports and the ice cream incident, I think it's important to kind of keep everything in context when you're reviewing those records. It's certainly something where the folks that testified and gave the opinions about the significance of those issues were informed of the circumstances and situation of what occurred. And I think, especially as it relates to Dr. Lynn's opinion, The issue with the ice cream and the pancake syrup had happened prior to her issuing her report. And so when she scored the various risk assessment tools and things that she took into consideration, that information, to the extent it's relevant to Mr. Lenz's risk to the public, was considered and appropriately weighed within those tools when she offered her opinion. And this is not a case where we have a difference in scoring of the various risk assessment tools. Dr. Albrecht had testified that he had reviewed Dr. Lenz's scoring assessment, and he agreed with the results of those assessments. Some disagreements about the appropriateness of one of the particular tools, but generally agreed as to what that level of risk is for Mr. Lenz. And then they just reached different opinions. And as the order clearly shows, Mr. Lenz met his burden, and the commissioner did not meet her burden, and the panel majority agreed, after weighing all of the evidence and making those credibility determinations, which they're able to do.
Counsel, I am inclined to agree with you. I understand, the syrup and the ice cream were violations. But normally when we see these things, the violations are more serious, like, you know, accessing pornography or you know, taking a whack at one of the treatment counselors. But one thing that does concern me, well, two things, actually. One is, you know, his refusal, I don't know if that's the right word, but, you know, his failure to want to participate in the reintegration activities, I do find that concerning. And the state, the Attorney General mentioned that. I mean, he has been out of the community for 30 years. Okay. And he's done fine when he goes to the doctor, but I assume there's someone with him. But, you know, if he's out for 30 years based on and combined with the seriousness of the underlying offenses, which are quite serious, shouldn't we be concerned since he's not done anything to reintegrate himself of just being out there?
Sure. And I think there's a couple points in response to that. So one, we have testimony from Mr. Schiffer on behalf of the clinical leadership that says, you know, part of living at the community preparation services building and having less restrictions, less external controls, less staff eyes on you, living in that environment every day requires you to be more independent. So that helps clients with that deinstitutionalization process that you're talking about. We also have the testimony that Mr. Lenz earned the right to have unaccompanied movement on campus. So he's able to roam around the campus unaccompanied by staff, and he's also allowed to take out other peers. And so he's participated in those quite regularly and not had any issues or concerns. And that, as Mr. Schiffer testified, also helps with that reintegration and deinstitutionalization. And then the other kind of key part is that there's a lot of similarity between the expectations for clients when they live at community preparation services and the conditions that they are expected to comply with on provisional discharge. And when you compare those two things and the similarities, you know, I think the process is similar. It's a graduated model of increased exposure to the community when the staff agree it's appropriate. And so in this case, the evidence was that Mr. Lenz, it's true, has not yet applied to get the community outings. But the evidence also showed that the staff there did not support him for having community outings. So even if he had applied, he wasn't going to get them. And that I think is really what the panel majority had said was, yeah, you know, we're not giving that too much weight or we're not holding that against him because he wasn't going to get that opportunity anyways because the staff have not approved it, which is required, if that answers your question. Oh, sorry, you're on mute.
My second question is, I think it's a fair point that, you know, that the state conceded thoughtfully that, you know, it's not like, well, there's three experts on this side and one expert on the other side, and that's that. However, if the state's burden is to prove by clear and convincing evidence, haven't they met that by having the, you know, what I would refer to as the career treatment professionals and the team who deals with him on a daily basis being unanimously opposing release, as opposed to, I hope I get it right, Dr. Alberg? Okay.
Yep.
Yes, Dr. Alberg, who sees him for an hour and a half.
Sure.
I mean, that's concerning to me.
Certainly. But there's two important points to point out. So it's not the treatment team that's giving an opinion about whether or not he's appropriate for provisional discharge. So in the record, I believe at the beginning of Mr. Schiffer's testimony, it talks about MSOP clinical leadership and who's involved in that group. They're higher ups, administration. So they're not the folks boots on the ground working with Mr. Lenz and doing the treatment reviews and kind of assessing his day-to-day work. They're reviewing progress notes and reports and talking to providers. So that's separate from his treatment team. And then in terms of the risk assessment, the sexual violence risk assessment, in this case, Dr. Mack and Rich, authored the initial report, Dr. Lind authored the updated report. Again, I'm pretty confident at the beginning of her testimony, she talks about how that's kind of an independent decision. So it's not intended to be, this is the facility's position supporting. It's a department within, or excuse me, it's maybe department, I can't think of a better word, within the Department of Human Services. And so it's not the facility you know, quote unquote, saying Mr. Lenz is unified, not supporting provisional discharge. And again, I think what we know from the Kenny case is that this is ultimately a legal decision, not a decision for the experts. And so the whole purpose, I think, of the statute having the authority for the CAP to appoint an independent examiner is to, again, just kind of step out a little bit and get that eyes on. You know, Dr. Ahlberg has been an examiner for many, many, many years. So it's not like he's some, you know, new person to the game who doesn't know how any of this works and doesn't have experience in this world making similar assessments and offering those kinds of opinions. And I think, you know, kind of, I guess the follow-up is I certainly would not agree that the commissioner met the burden of clear and convincing evidence. I think another point from the Kenny case is that, you know, you don't have to kind of wholeheartedly adopt an examiner's opinion. You can, you know, pick and choose as the fact finder, which opinions you find to be credible, persuasive, including the overall, but also portions of those particular opinions. And scattered throughout the record, the reports, the testimony, is a good amount of opinion that Mr. Lenz has made progress in treatment, is on a positive treatment trajectory. He's largely rule compliant. He follows staff directive. He's, although I think from the clinical leadership opinion, it said, Mr. Lenz has had some setbacks, but he was able to handle them appropriately and continue to move forward in his treatment work. He continues to demonstrate progress and commitment to making positive changes. And so I think when you're looking at and weighing the totality of the evidence, as the CAP majority clearly did in this case, there's plenty of evidence that supports he is entitled to provisional discharge and the commissioner failed to meet that burden of clear and convincing evidence. I think that's the other important point that I believe was Judge Hooten raised earlier is that the burden is on the commissioner. You know, there was no motion to dismiss. It's undisputed that Mr. Lenz met his prima facie burden to prove he was entitled to provisional discharge, and that burden did shift. And so I think, again, when you're considering the clear error standard of review, giving the deference to the fact finders who were there to hear all the evidence, view the witnesses, and make those credibility determinations, it's just clear that the panel majority's decision is reasonably supported by the record as required by the case law. You know, if the court has questions, I'm certainly happy to answer those. But I think, you know, this to me strikes me as a case that is, I hope, somewhat easy for this court to make a decision on. Obviously, you had three judges hear and review the exact same evidence, and they debated and disagreed about what it meant, how important what evidence was, and who was most believable. And that's, you know, somewhat similar to your role as the error correcting court, except that you don't get to make those credibility decisions and weigh that evidence. And I think it's clear that although there's disagreement between the CAP panel members, the record does reasonably support Mr. Lenz's provisional discharge. So we are asking that this court affirm the granting of the provisional discharge. If the court doesn't have any further questions, I can conclude.
Thank you, counsel. Appreciate your arguments.
Thank you.
Counsel for appellant, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. About a handful of points the commissioner has in response. First off, counsel for Mr. Lenz focused at the beginning on these solo walk privileges, I guess you could call them, or Mr. Lenz's ability to kind of walk about the campus in St. Peter by himself as apparently evidence that he's ready for provisional discharge. What counsel did not mention, however, which is that in or around May of 2022, as a result of one of the client accountability reports, Mr. Lenz actually lost his solo walking privileges. So while the record seems to reflect that he later got them back, it is notable that the car was significant enough that MSOP took away those privileges. So again, this
Mr. Noss, why did he lose them? What was the incident? It's in the record.
Your Honor, I'd have
was
to
was it look. More ice cream?
No, I believe it was as a result of the ice cream, which was the first of the three cars there was, just as a reminder, there was the ice cream related theft one. And then there was this one kind of using, I guess you call it state food. And then the third was the bullying incident that resulted in his vocational placement or job loss, which hasn't really been discussed today, but that's in the commissioner's brief. And that in and of itself is significant. Ms. Tone otherwise focused in part on, I think, essentially arguing that, well, although he hasn't done these reintegration outings, he's at CPS and CPS is sort of, you know, it's not the secure treatment facility. So maybe that should be given some weight as sort of being reintegration. Notably, Mr. Schiffer, who was the witness kind of on behalf of the clinical leadership at MSOP, he testified about the difference of doing the outings at CPS versus doing them out in the community. And that's a notable point. He testified that if Mr. Lenz were to do the outings at CPS, there are, compared to the outpatient treatment setting, more people who know him and can understand his strengths, limitations, and level of insight. And he also testified that with outpatient treatment, there isn't an integration with the people who supervise, or perhaps there is no supervision when it comes to outings in the community. So there is really a greatly reduced ability to utilize outside supervision and verification in a similar therapeutic manner to how they'd be used in CPS.
What about Ms. Thon's, I hope I pronounce it, is it Ms. Thon or Thon?
It's Thon.
Thank you. What about her point that, he didn't apply for the reintegration trips because they were going to turn him down. I mean, that does sort of make sense to me. I mean, you know, if I know I'm not going to get something, I'm not going to apply for it. I mean, and maybe he thought, well, if I applied for it and they turn me down, that's even worse because then they're turning me down, you know, and it's in the file. But what about her point about that?
You know, Your Honor, I don't know that the record supports that. I didn't hear a specific citation from Ms. Tone. It would seem that the record instead supports that Mr. Lenz could apply. And I believe Mr. Schiffer testified that even that clients in phase two could potentially get outings. So I would rely on what's in the commissioner's brief, but I do not recall any specific testimony where, for example, Mr. Schiffer said, no, the program, absolutely, he can apply all he wants, but we won't give him outings. I don't believe that's in the record. But again, Your Honor, the more important point here is that the record does absolutely support that Mr. Lenz just didn't apply for them. I believe on cross-examination, he gave some sort of excuse about it's too much red tape. And again, Dr. Ahlberg noted, well, maybe he's afraid to do it. So, but I see my time is ending. Again, the commissioner would respectfully request that the court reverse the panel majority's order. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you both for your oral arguments and your written submissions. We appreciate them. We will be issuing an opinion within the 90-day statutory timeframe. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.